Years ago, that this whole area was logged by the cow ranching family to fuel their lime kilns, and that forest is second growth. And so the environmental impact report, they reason that since it has not fully recovered and that endangered species cannot yet flourish there, that it's okay to log that forest because it's not a fully recovered forest. So they're reasoning their destruction by the past destruction, which is a horrible way to conduct a university. It's sickening.
Bullshit!
Yeah. It's also evident that much of the proposed growth is being pushed by corporate-funded scientific research and prestige-generating graduate programs, which comes at the expense of departments like the arts and humanities, which are not as profitable as this bio-nano-infotech that's on the horizon.
Bio-nano-infotech.
Bio-nano-infotech. Is that what this university was going to be about? Bio-nano-infotech?
Fuck no!
Is that what you're here for? Bio-nano-infotech?
Fuck that!
Is that the future of this university?
No!
God. The city is also against this plan because it puts extreme stress on housing, traffic, and water situations. They don't even think there's enough water for the city to run functionally if we add another 5,000 people. Serious concerns that the university doesn't seem to be really concerned with.
And so it's important. Got a drought on.
Yeah, we have a drought going on right now. So it's important that all of us are here today showing a visible resistance to this really unsustainable plan that's going to be just carried on without any consent from people that are involved in living in these communities. So I'm really glad people are here today showing their concern, willing to take time out of their day to say, hey, we're not cool with this plan, or we're willing to stand up for what we believe in. So it's good that we're here to make our resistance visible, and it's important to realize that movements are made of individuals, and I hope you come away today inspired to have your own creative efforts to join this growing resistance and not be a part of this just going along with what the university thinks is best for us, and that it's time to stand up for what we believe in and institute our own values and create the future we want to live in. So, with that said, we have a series of speakers who are going to talk to us today. The first being Don Stevens, who's with the Coalition for Limiting University Expansion. Don, if you want to head to the stage.
Thank you. I have to say that I was a graduate in 1976 from this campus with 5,000 students. I had a great education, a great time, and it was a beautiful campus. It's not as beautiful as it was back then. It's changed dramatically. But here we are, 15,000 students. There are a couple of main issues as I see it. One is overall sustainability for the entire community and Monterey Bay Area. CLU, Coalition for Limiting University Expansion, we have been doing everything we possibly can on the legal front to challenge the long-range development plan, and I'm gratified that we have so far won the first major round in court. A Republican-appointed judge clearly believed that the university was violating the California Environmental Quality Act. And regarding water, there is not enough water for the university's expansion plan, which is why the judge ruled against it. The two issues, I'm losing myself, I didn't really prepare my comments as well as I should have. I didn't realize this was going to be such a big crowd, but... there's quality of education. The faculty and staff people that I know have relayed to me that the quality of education has gone down, particularly with the expansion from 8,000 students to 15,000. Larger classes, they're harder to get, you have less connection with professors, and I think that's a shame. I wish that weren't the case. And there's also the sustainability issue. UCSC did not conduct global warming analysis on their expansion plan. The expansion plan by UCSC's report says that 11 major intersections in Santa Cruz will fail, meaning Caltrans has a rating system. A failure means you got to sit there idling, burning your gas as you wait for 5 or 10 minutes to get through intersections. That does not make any environmental sense at all. To make up for the water plan, the university hopes to prod the city to build a desal plant and burn fossil fuels to create fresh water from the sea. It's very expensive and energy intensive.
Where you can catch the fog.
So anyway, the community in Santa Cruz, from the standpoint of traffic, there's not the housing stock to get another 4,500 students. It's already pretty crammed. Santa Cruz just can't handle, the surrounding community cannot handle the growth envisioned by this expansion plan. And I believe that what you've got going today is very encouraging. I'm thrilled to see this going on, and I think this could be the seed that sprouts, gives growth to a much bigger movement here on the campus. I believe that the faculty and staff are, the large majority, are also opposed to this growth plan. But they feel somewhat powerless to oppose it. The real problem is in Oakland with the UC president's office. They have no idea what's going on here in Santa Cruz, and they see the corporate partnerships developing as a way to keep the finances of UC, well, they just want to get more money, basically. It's a real estate development with large corporate interests. I believe that the main problem, then, is not with most of the faculty and staff, but it's with having the vision to have the UC system grow in an environmentally sustainable way. And that's what they're missing. Yes, we need to educate, offer education to everyone. UC does a lot of great things. The problem now is the leadership with the UC. And what it needs to do is go in an environmentally sustainable direction, looking at realistic alternatives, as opposed to cutting down all the trees in the upper campus and cutting more trees here and having traffic all over the town, creating gridlock, and trying to use more water than is available, or burning fossil fuels to create that water. That's just not a vision for the future. Anyway, I thank you for listening. I don't want to bore you to death, and I'm glad to see it going on, and good luck. One more thing that I'd like to mention is UCSC talks a lot about diversity and the importance of having a diverse college. Expanding on this campus with the high prices in Santa Cruz and the crowding that's going on is not good for the diversity of the campus. There are viable plans to where the UCSC could expand in Watsonville and in Marina, where they already own 600 acres and could accommodate a lot of students, where you could live in areas that are, the housing is much less expensive. It would open the university more. And I think if we could get the university to turn in a more positive and environmentally sustainable direction, all their needs could be accomplished, but in a smarter way. And that's the issue. They got to get smarter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Don Stevens.
How much money is involved in this contract and who's profiting from it?
Yeah. Probably large corporations.
Well, who?
UBS.
Yeah. I want to remind you that after the speakers, we're going to have a lively march, so I encourage you to stay for that. It's very important. Our next speaker is Micah Poza with People Power.
for that. Next up, we have Micah Poza from People Power. He's been working on the issue of expansion for a long time.
Thanks. I'm the director of People Power. We have 400 members, and we're fighting the highway expansion and fighting for a train and trail in town, and we're fighting for a bike boulevard on King Street. But I got my start when I was a student in 1989 fighting. They were going to do a road up the Great Meadow and build all the way up that road. That was part of the last LRDP until, but we stopped that and we got it changed. And so I just want to encourage you that it is possible. They'll tell you on and on that you don't have any power because that's what they want to make you believe. But you do have the power, especially with help from, you know, Don and I and townies like us to make a change and to really radically change this plan. So, well, one thing we did with the road that was up to the Great Meadow is we put it on the campus ballot, and we also gave it to the Academic Senate. And the powers that be told us that didn't matter, but you know what? It did matter, because when 95% of the students voted against it, we took it to the student regent, and the student regent was forced to represent us, you know, at the Board of Regents, because, you know, even if he doesn't care about growth, he has to care about the students. So that's one tactic. But think about your own tactics. Stay creative and stay flexible. I guess I do want to, since you asked, I mean, not that I know better than you, because I'm old and it's been a long time, but, you know, People Power's perspective is sort of a per capita environmentalist. So it's hard to argue that we shouldn't have more students in the UC system as a whole, because it's a beautiful opportunity for people. But why the hell do they all need cars, for example? You know? And why do all the staff people need cars? And why do the faculty people need cars?
Because they're forced to live over the hill.
Yeah, well, so, you know, what about the chancellor walking to work along with the rest of us? I mean, if we're trying to create an academic environment, you know, what about Einstein riding his little, you know, beater bike and all that? That's, to me, that looks like academia. So I want to encourage you to, and I want to offer to help you, if we get together and we try to fight them on specific projects, like that evil road between Empire Grade and Upper Campus, which is useless, there's no point to it. Because even if they did put housing there, those people could have a beautiful walk to campus. They don't need to drive their cars to campus, they can walk to campus. And I also want to remind you that there's vague language in the long-range development plan for making inner growth development and cutting cars completely off of that upper loop, McLaughlin, and we should call them on that. We should say, okay, well, if you're giving us lip service, where are you going to close the road? Where are you going to stop the cars? Where are you going to take out the parking lots? So I'm really excited to see you all here, and I know that you have every chance of succeeding, and I look forward to coming up with specific tactics to stop some of the worst projects that are in this basically lousy plan. Nice to see you. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Mark Valen. He's going to talk about UC and the bomb class.
Yeah?
All right, you can tell him that, too.
All right.
One more cheer.
Yeah!
So, can everyone hear me?
Yeah!
They don't want us to use amplified sound for the next half hour, I guess, so we're just going to do it with our voices.
All right! Woo!
We don't need amplified sound, though, because we're here.
Woo!
As it is. So my name is Mark. I'm a student here, just like all of us, just as unique and special as all of us. And I'm going to talk about UC and the bomb. So how many people know about the UC's management of nuclear weapons labs? Show of hands. Good, that's good.
Lawrence Livermore, protected by Gatling guns, owned by the UC.
Exactly. So for those who don't know, the UC manages the two labs that have designed every nuclear weapon in the U.S. arsenal. So what that means is that every nuclear weapon the U.S. has ever made, including the ones dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were designed by UC employees.
Ooh.
And so why? Why does this happen?
Money!
Exactly, that's a good question. Money. So the mission statement of the UC, it rests on like three pillars. Education, which is us, going to classes, that's what we do. Research, which is where all the money's kind of flowing. And then public service. And so management of these labs is supposedly a public service. But It's debatable whether making nuclear weapons is really a public service. But the interesting thing is research, and that's why we're kind of all here. And that's how it links to expansion on this campus. And so there's programs at every UC campus funded by these labs, where research is going into the labs to promote the nuclear weapons complex. On this campus, we have ISSDM, Informational System Storage and Data Management, funded by Los Alamos, where they're working on supercomputers to then go into nuclear weapons simulation at the labs. And so the big question is, why does this stuff happen on campuses? And the answer is the money. So you look at the money and where the research money is coming from. It's coming from the military, it's coming from corporations, it's coming from biotech, from pharmaceutical companies. And so where's the research going to go, looking at where the money's coming in? It's going to go right back to where it is. And so who can change this? The regents can, but they won't. They're the ones wanting this in the first place. As my friend said before, the faculty and, I guess first the administration on this campus, they can't put a stop to it. They're kind of fighting for every penny they can get from the regents. And then faculty and students don't really have a say. We have our senates, but those don't have any say in terms of money. Except on the small occasions like this, when we're together and we're able to make a noise loud enough so that just for like one brief second, it'll stop things, what's going on. Stop them long enough. It doesn't have to be for too long, but long enough for them to hear the message and for something to be done about it. And so that's where our responsibility comes in. That's our responsibility as students to be the conscience of the regents and of the administration. So that's why we're here today. We have to let them know that this is not right, and we have to put a stop to this long enough for things to happen up front. And so that's what we're doing here. This is not right, and that's why we're all here. Remember that. So thanks.
She's with the Berkeley Tree Sit, a very similar action going on right now. She's also the same issues of expansion. Jerlina, if you're among us, please step forward. Cool. Please welcome Jerlina.
Oh boy. So I'll have to talk really loud. My name is Jerlina. I wrote some notes, but I probably won't use them too much. But basically, I just wanted to talk about interdependence a little bit. Coming from Berkeley, I feel like it's really empowering to see how we're all connected. In any case, our tree sit started a little less than a year ago, a few blocks from my house. And my roommate would go down there and get involved, but like I felt personally, it's too local, it's too small, the people are too ordinary. And so I was like, I'm going to go meet some real activists. I'm going to India, and had a fantastic time. But what was trippy was the woman who most inspired me, her name is Vandana Shiva. And she got her start in the CHIPCO movement, which I'm sure some of you have heard about. But CHIPCO means tree embracing. So it was a tree embracing movement that started, it ended up being nationally a national movement, but it started in Uttar Pradesh, which is in the Himalayas. And what would happen is these predominantly women from local villages, women with no money, no land, no nothing, they would go out and they say, you cannot, particularly to the colonial government, you cannot come in here and take down these trees that we need for our livelihood, but we need spiritually because we're connected to them. And so there were stories of the loggers that would come, and they'd be met by women embracing these trees, like three women to a tree saying, if you plan on cutting down that tree, you better plan on cutting down my body too. And so this was in about 1973. So they hugged those trees, and by 1980, Indira Gandhi, the president of India, she created a ban on the felling of trees for commercial profit in Uttar Pradesh for 15 years. And so here was a movement that was so local, that was started by people who were so ordinary, but it was so powerful. And now this woman, Vandana Shiva, she emerged from this movement, created the concept of ecofeminism, has created a global movement for the preservation, for the love, for the sacredness of land. It was so beautiful. So meeting her, I was like, I can't wait to get back to Berkeley to sleep with those trees, to love those trees, to hug those trees. And the night that I got back, I slept in the oak grove. And I've been around and about that oak grove ever since. It's been so transformative. It's been so beautiful and amazing. And part of that transformation has been locating all over the world other people, like I brought my favorite t-shirt from the MST, from the Zapatistas, or from the South Central Farm. All of these people all over the globe who are saying, no, this is not okay to take away the land, to disrespect it is not okay. This is part of me. This is interdependent with me and my spiritual life and my everything. It's not okay. So I'm coming down here as a representative kind of from Berkeley, but more as, I guess, in hippie terms, like a citizen of the earth, of the planet, and saying, like, this is our struggle. This is everybody's struggle. To preserve these trees is really important to all of us. So just, I guess, in solidarity, really, please, please struggle to save these trees. It's so important to me. So thank you, everybody.
Next up, we have Sam Potta with Students Against War.
Hi, everyone. So a lot of different things have been talked about today, and I'm going to try to do my best to, like, hit on a few other points before we move on to the most exciting part of the rally, which is the march. But how many folks here know who the UC Regents are? Okay, now the Regents, for those of you who didn't raise your hands, are 26 of the top corporate executives that make decisions that affect us here at the UC. So what that means is when the UC decides to go forward with the long range development plan, it is actually coding for the UC to be able to push forward with their corporate interests. And what I mean by that is that we can look at this long-range development plan kind of like a new frontier of sorts, right? So they're cutting down trees all around, cutting down the way that we can maybe understand our relationship to nature. But on top of that, they're contributing to the overall gentrification and whiteness of this university. And by whiteness, I mean just like corporations are run, the UC is run. So in an attempt to really make this the kind of system that they want, they want a very particular type of person here. And that type of person, right, does not need to have the languages programs that they've systematically cut to learn other cultures and languages. That other person does not need to have faculty of color who are allies like Angela Davis, Trisha Rose, and grad students who have been Paul Ortiz, who's being pushed out, or grad students of color who are also being systematically deprived and institutionally erased. That person that the UC wants does not need student-initiated outreach that's perpetuated by people of color on this campus and who are doing the job that the UC should be doing, right? So, like, I don't know if people really understand what this means for marginalized communities, right? It means that people, as student fees are raising 90%, which they've raised 90% in the past 10 years, as the amount of housing is being decreased and yet the housing fees are being raised, that means people outside of the university who can't even afford to come to the university really won't have a goddamn chance, right? Yeah. Okay, so what I want to bring to this scene is a larger image of how the UC is being more and more whitened in a way that's not good for any of us, right? The UC is pushing out people of color systematically and institutionally, not just here, but down below. So we all know, right, where, like, most of the people of color in Santa Cruz can afford to live are in the beach flats, right? Is that clear? Have people ever been to the beach flats here? Okay, so what does that mean? If more students come into the university, it means those people are being pushed down south towards Watsonville, right? And is it possible to bike to work here from Watsonville if you have three or four kids? No, so what does that mean for them? More fees for more cars. They have to pay for all the things that they need to pay for here. And we're talking about sustainability. So these are all changes that are going to affect not only our environment in terms of like the trees and the beautiful nature that we're here to preserve, but it also means sustainability in our movement, right? Am I being really unclear to folks? Because I feel like people are listening. And sustainability in our movements means a variety of differences, not just colors, but economic backgrounds, marginalized communities, marginalized voices. And we need to take a look around here right now and look around, meet people, and understand that if the UC is going to fucking win, it's by dividing us. Okay? So, like, the first step that we need to do is talk about sustainability in our movements and talk about how marginalized people in this community here in Santa Cruz on the Hill and outside of the Hill are being affected by the long-range development plan. Thank you.
Yo!
Researcher from the Disorientation Guide. Please welcome John O. Kincaid.
Hello. So I spent this summer doing some research. So I did some research this summer. And I found some very interestingly disturbing things. All right, so we're talking about the regions, we're talking about nuclear weapons, we're talking about war, we're talking about the environmental issues with the long-range development plan. And right now, a lot of people all over the state are talking about how the University of California is being privatized, how state funding is running out of money for education because a lot of it's going to war, a lot of it's going to the prison system. In 5 years, the state of California will be spending more money on the prison systems than they will on UC, CSU, and community colleges combined.
Boo!
So, but looking at who are these people involved here, I just kind of want to give you some examples here. As the state funding decreases, they're having to find private funding from private corporations. We're becoming very close to Silicon Valley. To the bio nano infotech revolution.
Bio nano infotech. Bio nano.
And so.
Bio nano infotech.
And they want to build this biomedical science facility, 4 stories with bio and nanotech research and a rodent testing facility in the basement, where the tree sitters are currently occupying. Recently in August, they hired this fella named Phil Berman to be the head of the biomolecular technology department. He used to be a researcher for this company, Genencor. That's very close to Chancellor Blumenthal. And they develop pharmaceuticals, vaccines, and such things. So there's one example. Another example is this company called URS. This is really where it gets interesting. So our environmental impact report that tells us the environmental impacts that development will have on this campus. 900-page document tells us everything from hydrology, from water, to air pollution, to traffic, to cutting down the trees, to our effects on endangered species. It was written by this company called URS, multinational corporation that does reconstruction work in Iraq and Afghanistan. They do large-scale development contracts. They have done reconstruction work in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast after Hurricane Katrina and Rita. They're the people telling us what the environmental impacts reported development are going to be.
Ridiculous.
Right? And they own this company called EG&G, which manages and maintains weapon systems. They build sonars for submarines. And just recently, they acquired Washington Group International, which is one of the companies that is a partnership with University of California and Bechtel to manage the nuclear weapons laboratories. So we have, on one hand, URS is telling us the environmental impacts of development here. On the other hand, they are researching and designing and building the new nuclear weapons that this Bush administration is pushing through very, very hard. It's having some resistance, but they are trying very hard to get this through. Oh yeah, who makes money from URS? Who made money? Well, so there's this fella, Richard Blum. He was the chairman of the Board of Regents. He still is. He's also married to Senator Dianne Feinstein. And so he was the vice president of URS. He owned 20% of the company. And then 2 years ago, when URS was awarded this development contract to develop the molecular foundry in Berkeley, which is much like the biomedical science facility up here, students found out and they said, well, what the fuck? And they went and asked them and said, is this not a conflict of interest? And it was because of students from this campus, from Berkeley, from students across the University of California that approached Regent Blum, one of the most powerful people in the University of California, and said, why is it that you are awarding contracts to this company that you're vice president of? Are you not profiting from this? Is this not a conflict of interest? And he resigned. So, and this is all just like, this is straight up factual information. You can read it in the newspapers, you can read it from URS's website, like, and it's right in front of our face. So, what we're looking at here, if you want to talk about looking at global capitalism, if you want to talk about the military-industrial complex, if you want to talk about corporations running rampant and our education being privatized, you're seeing it right here. Because they're the ones telling us what this LRDP is going to do to the forest, where 120 acres are going to be removed. So, I don't know, it just seems kind of, now's the chance maybe, you know? We're looking at the belly of the beast, at the enemy right here.
How's Genentech supposed to
Well, Genentech is a Silicon Valley-based corporation. They were an offshoot from Genentech, which got its rise after they developed a pharmaceutical that was essentially stolen from the University of California, San Francisco, in a patent dispute. But Genentech and George Blumenthal sit on the Silicon Valley Network together. They're like the big chamber of commerce for Silicon Valley Network. And they are preparing the next revolution of Silicon Valley, the bio-info-nanotech revolution, where this is going to be the next economic boom of Silicon Valley. And they are training us to be the new employees, and they are training us to be the new bosses, and charging us more money because we are going to have better jobs after graduation. But you look at the history of what happened in the 90s. They were college graduates once the boom busted, and they went to work for McDonald's in restaurants because they couldn't find a job in the high-tech industry after paying how much they paid for their education. So it's interesting. I don't know what y'all think about that, but we're looking at global capitalism right here in the face, and these are some of the people that are kind of like managing that. So thank you. Yeah.
next up, we have a real quick thing by Mountain Mulberry from the trailer park.
Hi. The trailer park is up there, and it's threatened by the long-range development plan. It's been threatened in the past. There's no shying away from that. But I can tell you that the trailer park genuinely has a community, and you are part of that community, and the community extends on the hill, off the hill, and I just want to say that threatening the trailer park threatens the most sincere community that anyone has the chance to be a part of. Say that living in a trailer proves that building buildings cannot build community. Building buildings builds more buildings, and then you're building buildings.
More walls.
And walls and buildings. And, and what we need is more solidarity and community and love. Thank you.
Next up, we have Ken Paul, alumni and shuttle driver. Please welcome Ken.
Ken Paul, thanks. Hi, I drive the bus up here, and I'm an alumni at Kresge, and I love the trailer park. It's part of the character, and this is part of the character, standing up. You guys are great. I'm really proud of you. I'm proud that I graduated here. We have to stop this. It's something that only you can do, and we have to fight them at the base. It's about the money. When you go off on spring break or whatever, they will cut the trees. We have to keep the pressure on them. I don't know if anyone knows anything about UCSC and its connection with South Africa.
Apartheid.
1984, the students took over the chancellor's office in the library, renamed it Mandela Library. You will not see this in any of the UC history lessons, because it shows the power of the students and what you can do. What happened was we called for divestiture. We took over the computers and we connected with other colleges. They called for divestiture. Once we got them to take their money out of South Africa, Coca-Cola dropped out of South Africa. It fell like dominoes. We have to keep the legacy going. You're doing great. The theater is terrific. Everybody can do something different. Whether you're a theater department or whatever, you write a play about what's going on here. If you're a musician, write songs about this. If you're a techie, find out what companies are making money from this. Yep. Print it on the web. Let everybody know. Write letters to the Sentinel. Half of them won't get printed. make films. I'm sorry. Yes, sir. Just do whatever you can. Tell everybody. Talk about it. On my bus, you're welcome to stand up and give your responses. And have fun and do it with love. Thank you.
Next up, we have a brief poetry reading by Alyssa.
I don't have the poem written. My name is Elisa. I speak for the trees. I am a poet of poetry.
Yeah.
Trees speak poems. For seldom ears, if you're walking with soft footsteps, you can hear. Trees are standing, and they stand there even when people try. They stay rooted and patient, and they speak, but not in languages that humans may be, than all humans hear. So it's our responsibility to speak for the trees. I wanted to I'm here for personal reasons. There are many political reasons that tie with my personal reasons. But I love the forest, and I love the trees. It is the place where I have grown, and I'm growing, and it's my home. It's our home. So I wanted to ask you all to remember maybe what brought you here today. Like, why do you care? And to take in all the information that you're getting, but also to connect with how you, like, what your heart speaks. And it's easy to get caught up in anger at all the injustices that are caught up with this issue.
Oh my God!
March!
Okay, sorry.
Continue.
So I'm just grateful that we are all here because standing for the trees that stand there for us. Hi everyone. In case you haven't heard the news, early this morning activists took to the redwood trees on Science Hill where they're planning on building the biomedical sciences facility. Sure! early this morning, activists took to the trees on Science Hill where they're planning on building the biomedical sciences facility, which is the first building planned of the long-range development plan. There's people up there right now. They need our support. They're up there, they're surrounded by police, and they have very, very limited food and water and blankets. We need to go over there right now. I just saw a crane go by and I'm concerned about their safety. I would really like us all to go over there and try to get supplies up to them. Are you guys down to do that?